Thank you for turning up. It was quite exciting how many people are going to make it. I'm going to be speaking about a project that I had about 5 years ago. I got the idea of an internet gift economy that's regulated by computers. And I'm going to break the talk down into 7 sections. So just to set the tone, just so you know what this is about, start to feel or love different motivations for why people can do things. That we're going to be tackling a modern myth, but that's a question that always seems to come up when I discuss the topic of gift economy, because people have this strange idea that without money, nothing is possible. Now I'm going to look at the smaller picture, we're going to look in detail at how two people could interact, how they do interact in the money economy. We're going to do something that economists don't do, just think about feelings, and then we're going to say, right, if two people can behave in a certain way, what would it take to make a system where many people could behave altruistically to one another? Is that a feasible thing? That's going to be using models. Again, this is about 5 years ago. I worked on the system of economics that didn't start with people are just selfish and that's just the way it is and everybody wants more for themselves and don't care about everybody else. What would economics look like if it thought about people as having friends, for example? Friends that they care about and that are important to them. So now that we have found this model, I worked for about a year on that, and then I thought, right, now we need to see, does it work? And that needs a computer system, and I couldn't find at that time any suitable computer system, so I set to work to make one which I call Friend to Friend. So as a little aside for the computer users in the audience, the computer techies, I hope most of you know what a peer-to-peer system is. Good, this mod's there. So it's like a peer-to-peer system. There's no one person in charge. But unlike a peer-to-peer system, you're not just randomly connected to another somebody on your level. Because you have a digital signature. And you can only connect to your friends. So if you use Facebook, you can see how it is. But it's not everybody's data on one site. Your computer is actually connecting to your friend's site. So that's a different thought. But I'm not going to talk a lot about that. I may be speaking later in Brussels, perhaps next week, about the computer aspect. So this is a quote from Einstein. And I think it's very important when you start out on something, why you're doing it. Are you doing it because you're afraid? Well, Einstein said, the single most important decision any of us will ever make is to believe whether or not the universe is friendly. Is it out to get us? Are we going to fight it? Are there terrorists everywhere trying to blow themselves up? Or could we live in a world of love? So, to a certain extent, these are opposite motivations. And I would like people to be in a world where love was the predominant force. They did things for the love of what they were doing, where the love of other people was central. So they were thinking about, what can I give that person? How can I improve that person's day? Not thinking, what can I get out of that person? What's in it for me? Because they realized that there is enough to go around on this small planet. And people get creative when they're in love. Their ideas, their minds open up, they have an energy. And if you've looked at medicine, then when people are stressed, they can run faster. For a short term, they have adrenaline. There's a body hormone, but in the long term, your body was never designed to be under prolonged periods of stress. And when you're afraid, a lot of people's mind can blank. That's not a healthy way to work. Definitely not long term. So, this is a fundamental dichotomy from the moment somebody pulls you off to school, if not before, most people realize, oh dear, we're going to have to do things we don't want to do. And that's called school when you're young. When you're older, it's called business. And you don't get to go there much in the business world with your family and friends. For most people, then, when they're thinking in a creative space, they're relaxed. Then they're with family and friends, and you can come up with whatever idea is inside you. You don't have to censor yourself and think, well, is this okay what I'm saying? People can make agreements, you make agreements with your friends, that can change. So this is one headspace, if you like, one way of organizing, planning, making things, and it's volitional. So you do it, you hang out with your friends because you want to hang out with your friends. I contrast that with the world of business. There's a big sense that, you know, I don't really like this, but I have to pay the bills, and, you know, business is business. It's tough. There's an idea of competition. So if you cheat with friends and your family, nobody can feel really proud about that. But in business, whatever people say, a lot of it comes down to how much money did you make. And you're with colleagues, not friends. Most of the time, things are planned, and you might be one of the planners, but a lot of people in a lot of businesses just get a piece of the picture, hand it down to them, and they're not asked for creative input, they're asked to carry forward that plan. So you have contracts. If you don't really trust the people that you're working with, because that's the culture. If somebody can outsmart you, then they feel they are pretty smart. But we don't behave that way with our friends. So I would like a world in which you get things that you now have to work for, go through the money process, the stress process. You can get those from your friends. Things are enforced in the business world. You don't want to be there, but if you're not there, you lose your job. What happens if you lose your job? You don't need money. What happens if you lose your money? Ah, well, you're out on the street. So it's kind of a veiled pressure, because most people turn up for work, most people pay bills, but it's there in everybody's minds. So it's a constant source of stress if you're in that situation, which, if you think about it, the work sphere, the professional sphere, has grown in our lifetimes. You think about when you were young, quite likely members of the family were looking after you, or neighbours, or friends. But there's a pressure in the money world to bring more and more areas of life in the economic realm. This is the myth that I'm going to be tackling, that you need money to live. Because that seems, particularly in the city, that seems common sense. You know, all the things that you need, how are you going to get there without money? But it's quite obvious to somebody who's born into this world that they get some things without money. We have a little period where we're provided for, and we can all agree that, and I'm talking about food, I'm talking about the basics, the essentials, somewhere to live, and so on. That without some things, you're not going to live. So, we call this fiction plus fact, because the fiction is that money can get you almost anything. Money equals almost anything. So, money is life. So our survival anxiety gets transferred into a money anxiety. So why do I call that fiction? Well, it seems to fit with our life experience. You walk in with a lot of money, you can pretty much get things. But, we're finding out, nobody's selling new ozone layers. You can spend a lot of money drilling for oil, but if the oil's gone, you're not going to get new oil. So the younger generation, born into a more heavily depleted world, are seeing this. How much does a new rainforest cost? Oh dear, we don't make rainforests. I mean, there's an economist's doctrine that whatever there is a demand for, some clever entrepreneur can provide. Because he's thinking about the profit motive. Well, I think there's quite a demand for alternative energy sources as efficient as oil. I didn't see any supply. So, this is a twisted ideology that we have. This is a set of ideas that reduce things to money. As if anything in the real world could be valued in money terms. So, we're going to look now at the smaller picture of how money distorts relationships. You're getting some apples from somebody at the market, or sometimes if it's a friend, you pay. Well, if it's the market relationship, you can't just walk up and take apples. So you pay money, and that closes the circle. But I don't know who you are, you don't know who I am, but here's some of this money now. That's good, that's how it works. Butter is an alternative to honey. So I've got some jam, and you those look like good apples. How much are you going to get us? I'm living in Bangladesh, and there's a lot more barter and negotiation goes on. You realise, well, this is up to grabs. Selling seems like the reverse of buying. Again, when you get the cash, that ends the relationship. So look at those two. We have buying and selling. You put those two together, and you're giving money, but you're getting it back. Does that equal barter? Well, it looks a bit like it does in terms of flow of goods, because the money flows round once, but it ends up where it started. So what I'd like to suggest is that buying and selling has a little price tag attached. And we don't often think about it. If we're using money, we've got to pay rent on that money. Why do we pay rent on money? Well, the money is created as debt. Money is created by the financial system for interest. They don't give it away. They lend it to us, and we try and make money. They call that forgery, some other crime. So you borrow it and pay it back with interest. Where does that interest come from? Where can that interest come from? We're not allowed to make money. Ah, well, I can get it from him. Where does he get it from? As a group, we need more money from the bankers next year or next month. So we are perpetually in debt. So if it seems like you're 1%, 2%, you think, well, hey, that's not a great deal. If it's 1% that you haven't got, then you're going to lose your house or whatever collateral you put up for that debt. So that's a problem of dealing with money. Now let's look at another way that two people could interact. They could give things to one another. And sharing food is the canonical act of altruism. You just kill a mammoth, and you're feeling hungry, but that's a lot of mammoth. So you can store, this is a tribe who talked about storing food in the belly of their brother. It's like, well, that food is going to go to waste. So it's like, let's all have a massive feast, and actually, for you meat eaters out there, that's a healthier way to eat meat. Just a little bit of meat every so often, or even a lot of meat, every so often, that's better. Now, I'm not talking about vegetarian here. Giving things back. Even animals of different species have long-standing relationships where they do favours for one another. Now, maybe an economist would say, oh, we're only doing that because they've worked out they're going to get something back. Well, that's one way to look at it. Or you could say, altruism is a natural reaction. And if somebody does you a favour, it's not that you have learned economics, it's just a healthy reaction to think, what can I do to help that person out? What I'd like to suggest here is there's an important difference between barter and giving and getting something back. If you look at it on one level, well, you've got a gift there, and maybe somebody takes those apples, makes some jam in. It looks similar. What's the difference? Well, it happens at different times. That's very convenient if you don't happen to have all your goods ready. For example, someone's going to give you something and you're going to do something with it and give it back. In the bartering world, you're thinking, what's the most I can get for this? You're behaving differently, you're thinking differently. And in the world of giving, you're just giving. Now, would you rather have some jam that you bartered for or some jam that somebody's given you? Well, it does depend who and why, but a barter, it's like two gifts, there's a time difference, but without trust. Because if I really trusted you, I could just give you something, and then if you have something to give it back, you give it back to me. And just to underline this, what about if two people stole things from each other, it just happened that way, or two people gave things to each other? Well, if you're taking a materialistic view, the same transaction has taken place, those goods have swapped. But if you're thinking about the relationships, you're thinking about how you make people feel, it's a world apart. Now this is a big problem, because our economic system doesn't have much of a way of dealing with relationships or feelings. If you're in charge, maybe you're in charge of a multinational, and you want to do the right thing for the world, and you want to be a nice guy. If you're looking at head on, you're looking at all the branches, you're looking through a spreadsheet. You're looking at things in mathematical terms. Now, where does maths come into this? As we know it, economics has got nothing much to say about this. Just to underline the point about what a strange way economics have twisting our ideas about what's profitable, does anybody know what Intel did with the 486DX chip and a little bit of electricity? No? No? they wouldn't know, they've got plenty, they couldn't sell for much. Well, yes, they did in a little way. They made the maths coprocessor into a cooking plate. They found a way they could just use electricity on their chips, and that would increase the value. They blew the maths coprocessor up, thus differentiating their product so they could adjust the prices and get different markets. So the people who weren't going to pay a lot of money could get the cheap version, the SX, without the coprocessor. So they're actually destroying, never mind the environment, never mind cutting down rainforests that they own, they're destroying their own products in the name of profitability. And this is the wrong-run strategy. I mean, this is one example, but it's all over. People whose idea of what it is to be profitable, is linked to what it is to be successful, is highly disruptive. The larger picture, if you could get some software and find somebody, you need somebody to do something for you, you could pay them is not quite the right word, but it would be paid in a normal economy, you can say thank you, you credit them without money, and sometimes people would come to you and request you to do things. You wouldn't take money from them because you didn't need money. Using this system, that's the larger picture of how individual gifts could work. So, how would that look? This is just a very simple idea. You'd be navigate something, say you're interested in apples, and you say, okay, how many apples? Let's say you wanted 2 kilos. Then these people could offer you apples. Now, there's nuances here. I mean, that could be a friend of a friend of a friend, but it would always be according to the software I propose, some of you buy a social connection. So don't think marketplace, don't think this guy's trying to cheat you. Think a friend of a friend's just turned up and he happens to have a load of apples. Well, yeah, he could cheat you, but it wouldn't really work well for him. If you have a lot of apples, who is there who wants apples? If you just were going to get this from your friends, you could just ask your friends. You would know, okay, he's the guy who's want apples at this time. He's an apple farmer, sure, he's got apples. So that would be without any assistance from software. And I could pick up my cell phone, and I could ring, and I could say, really urgent, can you ask your friends as well? And if it was really urgent, they might. But if we all did that, we'd spend our lives on the phone, ringing our friends, asking them things. Well, why not get software to do that? Because computers are pretty good at that sort of thing. So, if you put a request, that could go from friend to friend to friend. Somebody matches that request. They previously said, yes, I've got some apples. They're going to last for this many days. They're available here. I'd like to give them to somebody. Then you can get an apples like that. So then you have to say thank you in this system. I say have to. It's up to you. If you're the sort of guy who's happy to take things from friends of friends and then not bother to thank them, you can do that, but probably you wouldn't be doing it for very long. And a few of your friends would suggest that you change your behavior. How would you do that? Then you state, you link them. See, publishing this is not a central site. It's not one place with everybody's records, because that would sound uncannily like the financial system we have today. And who knows who's running that system? Are these people we really trust? Well, people like the system, they can stay in it. But I suggest another system where those records are kept separately. You keep your records, I'll keep my records, we will interface them using the web. Digital keys are very important here. Without wanting to get technical, it's a way that, like when you sign a document, we can be sure who it is who's creating this data. So that's more important than if we're just posting random photos to Facebook. People are going to have their own servers, and they're going to be connected somehow. So, that was the conclusion of the larger picture. Now, what are these servers holding? I've talked about economic data. Well, if we took the system, tried to model it around the ordinary economic system, then I just have a look at the work. I've tried it. My first thought, this is a quote from Abraham Maslow. He said, classical economic theory, based as it is on an inadequate theory of human motivation, because it thinks that everybody's just out for themselves all the time, could be revolutionized by accepting the reality of higher human needs, including the impulse to self-actualization. I translate that as getting on your own vibe, doing the things that make sense to you, fulfilling your unique destiny. Not terms you hear from ordinary economists, perhaps. The impulse and the love for the highest values. So, the practical example, you get a call on your mobile and says, can you call me back? This is a really expensive call for me. Because of how it works on the talk plans, then you think, well, okay, I can ring them back. If I ring this person back, I'm going to spend 3 euro cents a minute, and otherwise he's going to spend 7 euro cents a minute. Would you ring them back? Does it matter who it is? Does it matter whether you've got credit on your bank? It matters all sorts of things. Right? It's your mum or your wife. You better ring them back. If that relationship's important to you, well, that's how you manage your relationships. But that was my way of showing, look, we're not always taking the short-term option of what's the most in for me. I mean, even if there are a certain level of multinational, even if that's what the economic textbooks say, companies don't even behave like that. If you've got an economic system founded on that, then we like to run into trouble. This is another way that I propose to do it. You've heard it said, I suspect, that you get what you measure. I'm putting forward a system which is measuring healthy relationships, which takes that into account. So, your wealth in this system is not how much you've gathered to yourself and taken from others, but how many people you've helped, how many people trust you, how many people care about you. These, I think, in the older days, before money and cities and economy was so important, I think this is much more how people would understand what it means to be human. To get a little bit mathematical, because I am trained as a mathematician, that was a long time ago, but saying you have sympathy for a friend if and only if you will give up your own profit to prevent their loss. If you say, well, stop him, I'm not doing anything for him, but then you don't have sympathy for that guy. It's not a binary yes you do or no you don't. How much sympathy? I mean, if it's a random stranger or an advertiser or somebody you really don't care about, you've got zero sympathy, you never call them back. Doesn't matter what price it is, if it's costing me any money, I'm not going to do it. If it's, say, it's your wife's calling you and you've got a joint bank account, why would you not call her back? Plus, you've got the emotional aspect. So I've called that a sympathy of one, because any money that you're losing is saving. So when, according to that example, you have an indifference value. If you're somebody towards this end of the spectrum, more sympathy, yes, I'll call you back, but it's only costing me 3 against 7, that's not much. If you're somebody down here, maybe you've got a bit of sympathy, but it's like, well, sorry, mate, it's my money as well here. So, indirect sympathy, well, if I've got sympathy for you, you've got sympathy for your friends, and so on, suddenly, everybody's welfare is important to me. Maybe not much, more or less. I can't say, well, stop him, I don't care about him. So, well, I don't know who he is. But he is somebody's friend. We're all connected. And this is, I think, is a really important understanding. I mean, yes, we've heard about 6 degrees, but we have an economic system which says, well, no, everybody's a little isolated unit. They need their own washing machine. They're up. When you look at the lives that people lead, many of them, particularly in cities, not so much in Bangladesh, but in the developed countries, where money defines our relationships, we are very isolated. So an alternative way of looking at things, which could understand, you've got a lot of angry, upset people in your street, a lot of angry, upset friends, you're not likely to be feeling good about life, I think, is a closer model of how people behave and how they would like the freedom to behave. So, this is express the word self here. Self-evaluation. So, when you have an interaction with somebody, and I don't talk about buying and selling, you use these words, it's about buying, okay, I'll argue my price. There's a whole frame of selfishness that comes into it. Did you get a good price? What's a good price if you're selling anything more? So, what's good about it? It's like a good job. If you get more, that's good. But if you're in an altruistic frame, then you've got to think about it another way. So, you can evaluate yourself. Now that too, you think, well, system, some people would say, especially economists, might say, well, if people can evaluate their own interactions, that's never going to work. The people are just selfish, they're going to fiddle the system to their benefit. And some people might behave like that, but if everybody behaves like that, it won't work. But my thought is, most people, most of the time, really not out to cause a great deal of trouble. They might cut a corner or two, but they do want to live in a world where everybody gets housed and fed. And they are really upset about the world in which they live now, in which this doesn't seem to be happening. More and more money gets spent on weapons and terror. So, how would they do that? They would evaluate it. They're just putting a piece of data online. Not going to go easy on you, but they can express themselves in terms of money, if that happens to be the helpful unit. Maybe you spend some money to help somebody out. Maybe you spend some time as well. But we don't have to use money, we don't have to use time. So we're not tied to any particular way to express ourselves. So maybe you could do something. The farmer's got so many apples that he just has to pick them up, and it takes him 2 minutes to gather a basket of apples. And you can give it to somebody who will have to work 10 minutes to get the money to buy those apples. So we have a non-zero sum. That's not a brilliant example. A better one would be something like, you've got a car and your friend is arriving at the station, so it's going to take you 5 minutes to pick them up at the station, but it would take them 20 minutes to walk. And you care about that friend. So it's the right thing to do on one level. If it's a real friendship, then yeah, we help each other out. So let's have an economic calculus that reflects that. I'm going to use the word multidimensional. That again is not, should not scare you off, that just means more than one number. We're thinking, well, the price has to be a single number, how many euros, how many yen, whatever. But if there's two people involved, and we're trying to honestly represent the transaction, well, you may have your opinion, I have mine. And it's not a power struggle, I want the price down, no, make it more. We just look, publish how we feel about something. So another way to not think economics, just think this is a network in which people can express themselves. And it's connected, so you can take that into account when you're thinking, how should I behave? Well, I don't want to upset these people. You never upset those people. Maybe you think, yes, I'd really like to do that. Well, a lot of people would like you to do that. It's a way you can choose to help your behavior fit with the preferences that other people have expressed. For example, and this is one way that you could look at a relationship. But at some point, you're going to have to take this data, these numbers, and show it to people in a form they can understand. Well, if you know X and Y axes, that's a win for the guy who's getting a lift to the lift from the station, plus 10, and it costs 2 for someone else. Then if it goes the other way, you get to give a lift back. Where's the next door when you both save each other time? You help each other out. And you can do more. So this would be an alternative to a list of bank transactions. How has that person's behavior impacted you? Or, how has it impacted your friends? Because maybe you're thinking, should I help this guy? I don't know much he's ever done with me. He helped my brother. Okay, cool. Well, then you're going to help him. So it becomes quite important whether you can care about you in the network. If you can help, maybe you can't help out somebody directly. That's going to be a problem if you're in a bartering system. Because you've got something you want, but I can't help you out. But if we have computers to reconcile this, then it can flow through the network. So, No bullets on that slide, but I would like to live in this world. And I believe, in spite of all the damage that's been done, that we can live in a world like this. This is the computer section. Friend-to-friend network. Again, I've published on this in other places. And it's not designed to do a computer, but remember what we said, it stores data. This is your alternative economic transactions. It manages cryptography. It manages public private keys so that it can't easily be hacked. And it's done on a decentralized basis. That, I suspect, is going to be a lot easier to keep private than one large target, which would call the hackers and the people who like to get the hands on this data can look into. And it's got a bit of programming ability to automate it. And this is how, in the old world, data is stored. Talk about the old world because I'm already in the new world. Well, I'd like to be. Data storage on the way. You go to a website and they're saying, who are you? Give us some details. And you give them some details and they give you a cookie. They store it in their big database. That's the big database. It's got all the data. You go to the next website, they don't know who you are either. So you're going to give them a copy of the data. And then give you a password or a cookie. It's up to you. First of all, to hand out lots of copies of your data to people who you may not trust, who want to use it, and it's up to you to prove your identity. So, well, that's how the web works. Could it be done in a more efficient or a more secure way? What about if you had one machine, your friend-to-friend server, which stored all your data, one copy of your data, so that if you moved house or your circumstances change, you change one copy. Anybody wants the data? Maybe they want your credit card number because you're buying a book off them. Then they can ask for it. They come to you with a key and say, look, this is us, the guys at Amazon, you do trust us. Can you give us back 10 for Meridian? So this is an alternative way of managing data that I've designed and published. I've got a prototype of this running. So that's the structure. Processing the data is done with these machines, which don't have to be physical. If you trust somebody online, they can manage your server for you. Then you have the internet to transport that to make sure that your data can communicate with other people's. What we particularly need for the system, we need to have this meaning ascribed to the data, how much you trust people, if they've helped you or permitted you, how you feel about what they've done. That's the altruistic economics. There's a meta-evaluation layer which will look through a lot of data in the same way that Google will look through a huge amount of data and will just give you a simple set of the things that you might like these 10 pages are probably the pages for your keywords. So this too will summarize a lot of data and say, yeah, don't trust him. He's been a good guy, he's helped you out, and so on. And then the last level is the level that shows it to the user, so this will deal with different languages, maybe show graphics. That's the gift economy layer. So that's the project structure. Where are you in the project? It's a prototype of friend-to-friend which is done. The internet's already there. You can put in a dark net, that's just a method you can try and use to be more anonymous. If you were worried about central authorities of any kind monitoring what was going on. Definition is been published. Meta-evaluation and gift economy happens. And it's fair to say that I will very much appreciate any help on this. And now I'll take questions.